If you're going to San Diego, hey, by the way, say hi. San Diego Comic-Con.
If you're in San Diego, wear flowers in your hair.
No, that's San Francisco. You're completely wrong.
Shit. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
I'm Ian Boothby.
Just putting my glasses on so I can actually see. You are Ian Boothby.
Hey, how are you?
How are you doing there?
Are you sure those aren't going to steam up from the heat?
Yes, I'm a little afraid of that.
This is our summer shows where we mm-hmm. always start by going, oh, dear God.
What the heck is going on?
We could be doing these at the library where it is air conditioned and free. Hmm. Why are we here? Yeah. Why are we here in the hot lodge?
We suffer for our art.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my explanation. We're too lazy to go to the library?
I don't know. And I think I saw Dale Cooper walk by on his way to the, the Black Lodge? Is that where he is? Shadow Lodge? What lodge does he go to?
He's part of the Black Lodge.
Black That's Lodge?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds cool and refreshing.
Yeah.
It doesn't look hot there is what I'm saying. You know? Everyone's dressed in suits.
But he doesn't want to go back to the Black Lodge.
He doesn't want to go back to the Black Lodge.
Remember, he constructs an elaborate scheme to keep himself from being taken back to the lodge.
Oh, very good. Okay, well, we're now getting into spoilers.
We don't want to spoil the show for people. I understand. That's a general.
And I think you're not talking necessarily about Cooper, but someone who might say they're Cooper.
Well, now you're spoiling it.
Well, you set it up the other way. Who knows? But you know what? We could all be wrong. Who the heck knows? Who the heck knows? Now, Dave,
once again, two Cokes.
Well, what happened was I set you up with a Coke a half hour ago. I said I was coming in at a certain time, and mm-hmm. And I got here a half hour early. Sent a little message going, oh, a little early. But I got you a Coke then, and because I left it in this room, it's heated up to the point where it's just hot syrup, like a hot maple syrup. With some cinnamon in it, a couple of cloves maybe. And so I ran down to get you a cold one so that you could survive the
Thank
show.
Thank you.
And so now, as we talked about last week, they all have slogans on them now. Yeah. I'm not. I'm having a Diet Dr. Pepper, so I've got no slogan.
You got nothing going for you.
And a big bottle of water. What are your slogans this week? Because this will color the show.
This will color the show.
Color the tone of the
show. Color the tone of the show. Well, then you'd be happy to know that this Coke that you got me, the cold Coke, is a taste the feeling. So
what
I don't know
the
what
fuck does that mean?
I don't even know what that means.
It means
I don't
nothing.
Know. Yeah, it's a meaningless expression.
You can taste a feeling?
Yeah, you can taste a feeling.
I guess something tastes hot and burning, and that would be a feeling.
But it's not hot and burning. This is the cooled one. So I'm tasting the coolness.
That's
cool.
No, that's a feeling. But that you're not tasting coolness. Coolness is touch related. That's a completely different sense.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, you got this all the senses. You got your sight, sound, taste, touch, and I think the other one is origami. I think that's what it is, right? Isn't that the one?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue with you.
What's the other one say?
This one, you're making fun of it. Whatever that, I can't even remember. That was so anodyne. The last one was so boring. I can't remember what it was.
It was like smell the love.
Smell the love.
What was this?
This one is anything for the snap. Speaking of, what does that mean? Now, once again, kids are all over this.
Yeah.
They know what it means.
Well, here's what I know. Snap, such a happy sound. You got to have snap.
Yeah.
Or the clock's not wound. That's what I know from an old Rice Krispies ad.
Oh.
Yeah.
You got to have snap.
Or the clock's
not
wound.
Was he feeling a little left out?
I don't know. He's the first guy mentioned.
He's the first guy mentioned. Exactly. So it's weird that he needed maybe older son kind of thing, needs a little more attention.
Oh, you think that's the birth order?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, let's just go with this. You think the three elves, and I'm saying they're elves because they're elven.
They're obviously elves.
Well, maybe not necessarily all. They could be
else are they?
Goblins.
They don't look like goblins.
They
to
could
me.
Be breakfast goblins.
Okay. They might be different. Breakfast
the depths
goblins.
Of hell to tempt you.
Sure.
So Imps? You're assuming that they're related, these three elves.
Yes.
Oh, they're
brothers.
Not just workmates.
No.
They look so different.
They have the same.
They look so different. The facially, they've got different hair.
But
they dress very different.
They have the same last name.
I'll explain.
Krispies.
Oh, you think that's their last name?
Yeah.
The one whose name is Snap Krispies.
Yeah.
And it's Crackle Krispies and Pop Krispies.
That's right.
So what do you think their dad's name is? Because he can't be called Pop Krispies, even though that would obviously be what you
would
call him.
That would have been the thing. Bernie.
Bernie Krispies?
Yeah.
Oh, they call him by his first name. Well, that's a very elven thing to do.
Yeah, it's so typical. Yeah, so there you go. There's your evidence.
The elven dads, they want to be your best friend.
Yeah, that's
and they don't want to really be a dad.
Nothing worse than the cool dad.
Yeah.
Or mom.
When I was a kid, what I really wanted was the frosted Rice Krispies.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was just called Frosted Rice, and the mascot on the box. Well, let me just you take a guess. Who was the mascot on the box?
It's Frosted Rice.
Yep.
Tony the Tiger.
Oh, very close.
Okay, let me just change that up.
Yeah. Good guess. Solid guess. Occasionally, he would make a guest appearance on the box.
I shouldn't have said a thing. Yeah. Because if I left it blank, then it would have, the time my, when I do the remove the pauses, it would have taken out my pause, and I would have seemed very clever when I said, I don't know. I don't know who it would be.
It's Tony Jr.
Tony Jr.
Yep.
So, okay.
Tony's son. Okay. Who was later abandoned. Like, they just ditched that character completely. And then he became a surrogate dad to, like, all these other kids for some reason, to give them encouraging sports advice, but just never dealt with his own son again. But, Tony Jr. was the mascot for Frosted Rice. I believe once upon a time it was a fairly, nowadays would not be racially sensitive character.
Tony?
Nope, not that. Just a character that would tell you about Frosted Rice.
Oh.
Yeah. You know what I'm... Guess what I'm talking about, and then you think about it. Then there you go. Who would be culturally insensitive to talk about rice?
Okay.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah.
You got it. Yeah, it's in your head. Doesn't need to be said out loud. Everything's fine. It's in the past for a reason. But yeah, I really liked Tony Jr., and I think the last time we saw Tony...
Glad you were close.
Well, here's the last time I think we saw Tony Jr.
Yeah.
Was when it was the Year of the Tiger. There was a big celebration.
Yes.
And so Tony was being, like, paraded by all the breakfast cereal characters.
Finally.
And Tony Jr. walked alongside, proudly gazing as his old man while had, like, one of them parade sticks. Mm. I don't know what you call them, but a baton or something.
Baton,
and you're, like,
good.
back and forth, yeah. Ha-ha, yeah. Worship my father, all ye mortals.
Yeah.
And that was what it was like for that year. And then you never saw the kid again. Maybe he grew up to be the next Tony. Maybe that's what happened. That's possible.
The last time I saw Tony Jr., he was like a silhouette against the sunset, just walking away, quite distant from me. And he kind of turned and waved a sad wave.
Uh-huh.
And he continued walking, and I have never seen him since then.
Oh, okay.
It was a sad day.
Anything happened before in that day to lead up to that?
I punched him.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why I left. I think he's overly sensitive. Tony
you know,
Jr.
back in those days, it was okay to punch a guy. Mm-hmm. Like, that Hawaiian Punch guy, that was the hero of Hawaiian Punch, and he would just sucker punch an old man was thirsty. Hey, you thirsty?
Best.
Yeah, here, eat fist, fuck face. And that's and that was, like, the mascot for Hawaiian Punch.
We've talked about it before, but there's those Jim Henson ads for chips and or bread or whatever, where the guy...
Coffee, for the most part.
Coffee, where the person, you know, the guy doesn't like it, so he gets shot with a cannon.
Yeah. One guy had a positive name, one guy had a negative name. One was like, you know, yes, and one was no, but it was like sort of like that.
Okay.
Yeah, those names, yeah.
Yeah. One was Ness and one was Mo.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, they would the guy would say, would you like a cup of whatever's coffee?
Yeah.
And you go, no. And then you get murdered.
Yes. So the Hawaiian punch ones... The Hawaiian Punch ones
are down
they're kind
that.
Of a holdover
toned
of that,
down from that yeah.
of that sales technique
yeah.
of the, you know, not even subtly threaten you.
I've mentioned this before, but no one has been able to remember whatever this game was. But it was a commercial that terrified me as a kid, which was there's a nerd doing some nerdy stuff and living his nerd life, and then a sultan comes to town and wants to play this board game, and no one wants to play the board game with the sultan. Forces the nerd to play. Nerd doesn't want to play.
Yeah.
Nerd plays, wins, gets murdered by the guy.
Really?
Yeah. Usually gets run over by a steamroller or crushed in some way, and now he's flat. But it's not like, oh, and he snaps out of it and he's alive. It ends with him dead because he doesn't like to lose with this game. So I forget what the board game was, but yeah, that was the thing. And terrified me as a kid.
A board game was Sore Loser.
That would be a great name for a board game, Sore Loser. Would you win by losing? Or would you have to, if you lose, you get to do something horrible to the other person.
Yeah.
And so you actually want to kind of lose a certain turn.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you can do something bad.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I like it. Sore Loser.
I once had I didn't know this person very well. I met him in junior high and invited him over. And we're going to play a board game. Decided to play Risk. Did you ever play Risk?
I've got it on my phone, I believe, but I haven't.
I don't
know
if you get as emotionally attached to your Risk game.
What's the deal with Risk? You take over the world?
Yeah, it's like a game of conquest. So you have armies, you amass your armies.
Yeah.
And the idea is to choose, you want to get like a complete continent, and that will allow you to amass more armies.
And when you get one, do you yell, I'm incontinent?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
That's the Risk. But
it's a bit of a risk. Yeah.
We were playing this game.
That's a better game, by the way, than Risk that you've just said.
So we were playing this game, and I was winning. I was winning handily.
Yeah.
And this
you
guy,
were a real Hitler.
And this guy, who I this was the first time I'd ever like had like any kind of like close car. We talked in school.
Yeah.
So I invited him over, and he was losing it. He was like throwing my dice around my parents' living room, And he's just like so mad and stuff. So then I was like, oh, this is terrible. Like, I feel terrible for this guy. So I thought, well, I'll lose because who cares? It's just a game. So I made what I thought was the most obvious blunder anyone could make. Like, it was a pity move. Did this guy pick up on it?
You got into a land war in Asia.
Not only was he a sore loser, he was the worst winner I've ever played against. Then he started like crowing away and braying. Oh, it was. Then I was really mad. I wish it was too late though. I had made such a terrible blunder that there's just no recovery. But I really wish I could have recovered and won the game and just rubbed his face in it. It's terrible.
Were you guys drinking soda pop at the time?
No, we were just playing. We didn't have like pop at our house.
You invite him over for a cold glass of water and a board game?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, well, maybe had some Kool-Aid. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Maybe you got sugar.
I don't remember.
You got buzzed on the
No,
sugar.
No. There's no excuse for that kind of behavior.
No, there's no excuse. I don't care. There's sometimes a reason.
You can take ecstasy. You could take
Oh, did you take
PCP.
Ecstasy before you played the risk?
Well, I took PCP.
It's bad that he's in a bad mood. Oh, PCP makes sense.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's your problem.
I thought I could fly. I jumped off the roof. Then we played Risk. I only had a one-story house.
That is the one. It used. I remember it used to be acid that would make you jump out
PCP,
the window.
PCP, White Shadow.
Okay. Well, look, we can list a wide variety of shows. That
I'm too young for the acid scare.
Okay.
But I'm old enough for the PCP
Let me
scare.
Lay down an acid scare for you then. Harry Osborn trying acid for the first time in Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. See, I didn't read that.
And he took it and he thought that he could fly,
yep.
I believe, was
yep.
going to walk off a roof.
He could. Luckily, he was a Green Goblin.
Later he could. That is a good point. Okay, yeah. If he had done it later, no problem.
Yeah.
As long as he had his glider. But no, that was the first issue of Spider-Man that had parental authority or parental...
It did not get the Comics Code Seal of Approval?
Comics Code Seal of Approval. That was one that they went, we can't give you that because you've got drugs in here. And Stan Lee said, that's fine.
Really?
It's more important.
Wow. And
so that
Good
was
for
their
him.
Special don't do drugs issue. And after that, no kid ever did drugs.
Ever again.
Unless they saw, say, an underdog cartoon where he got his power from taking drugs.
That's a problem. Or read Alice in Wonderland.
Or read Our Man comics where he got his powers from taking drugs. A lot of people took the drugs and got their powers by popping a pill.
That's a bad moral message.
You know what's amazing though, when like Our Man or any of these guys would pop the pill, immediately it would take effect.
Mm.
No They'd dissolving in the stomach, waiting
That's
before
lucky.
You can fly. Just boom right in.
But I'm just going to assume, based on the time that they're like doing their thing, some sort of atomic power was involved in there.
Not Our Man, but I would say maybe Underdog, possibly. I'm not sure. You know, I have no idea what Underdog's origins are, except for possibly the movie version, in which case, fuck it. No, forget that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Who did Wonder? Is that Terry Toons? It wasn't Hanna-Barbera, I don't think.
No, it wasn't Terry Toons. It was the same people that did... I really think it was the same people that did like Bullwinkle, wasn't it? Because it's very similar in style.
Oh, okay.
You know, very similar in style to Rocky and Bullwinkle. Yeah.
Something Scott.
Jay Ward?
Oh,
Jay. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great Scott. It's Jay Ward. That's what people would always say. Exactly.
I don't know. I'm glad that my completely wrong name that I said was able to clue you in.
With
the
I can't really remember what his girlfriend, I want to say Penelope Pureheart, but that might be wrong. Even though she's a dog, so it should be Penelope Purebred. That's what it probably should be, but you don't want to get into a eugenics thing. Then it was Riff Raff was the main villain.
Riff Raff. And what was he?
He was like a gangster, and he was a dog.
Oh,
and
he was another dog. So they were all dogs. It was like basically a dog-based thing.
No.
Oh.
Because there was also Simon Bar Sinister, who was the mad scientist. He's kind of a Lex Luthor scientist.
And he was...
By the way, sorry, guys. We gotta acknowledge the siren, because that's part of our bit that we used to... Oh, no, it's gone. That was something we established in like episode 4, and we haven't been able to drop.
I think people like it.
Oh, actually, there it goes.
Oh, there... Well, they seem rather
casual.
Lackadaisical,
lackadaisical ambulance.
Get to work! They're not listening to me.
There he goes. We should have dropped that whole ambulance thing like Happy Days dropped Chuck. You know, just, have the siren thing go up the stairs and never come back down.
Why, you don't like it?
Maybe we'll drop it on the 300th episode. We'll have a good going off of that.
I mean, our show has no hook. Okay, we have no hook to our show. We have one hook.
What is what?
The stupid siren thing. That's all we got going for us.
Mm.
There's no other reason to tune into our show weekly except to play a rather poor drinking game, since you probably only get one or two drinks.
And neither of us drink, really.
Well, no. Well, I could take a sip of my Coke.
Right, but we're not big booze pounders.
No, I'm not at all.
You know, maybe if you and your friend, when you're playing Risk, yeah. had a couple of cocktails, should've, maybe everything would have calmed yeah. down.
Should have snuck into my parents, whatever they had in there.
Do you know what game people really get angry at?
Risk.
Risk is definitely one of them. Okay. People, like, if you look online, people do talk about how they've had fights over Risk.
Oh, yeah, it's a very emotional game. You get really...
Really emotional.
Because you build up this big thing, and then...
The only game I think that gets people more angry, besides Punch Tag...
Punch Buggy?
Sure, Punch Buggy also. Ugh.
Yeah.
Makes you hate that. Volkswagens, frankly. is Monopoly. Because
yeah.
you've got to crush the other. Yeah. It's not just circumstance. Mm. It's you've actively got to destroy everybody else to win.
I guess. You know, I honestly don't remember ever finishing a game of Monopoly.
That is true. And it's also the longest game in the world.
Yeah.
To the point where you just go, meh.
Yeah, I never enjoyed it.
I guess myself. We're good.
Yeah, I'm not,
yeah, fine.
Not my thing.
Yeah.
Not my thing at all.
I've tried starting playing Monopoly with my nephew and my niece. We usually spend about an hour setting up, and yeah. then the mom goes, we need the table for dinner or something. And that's the end of that. Clear it off.
You need to play like games that are much more fun, like Spikeball. Or...
Okay. I think our hook is just talking about Spikeball now.
Connect Four. That was a fun game to play.
Yeah, that's fast, too.
That's a fast game, yeah.
But you're always angry when you lose.
Why?
Because it's stupid what you did. You always lose because of dumb, and you feel mad.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Yeah, it's okay, I guess.
It's a fast-paced game. You have a chance to come back again.
Mm-hmm. By the way, my nephew had his 15th birthday this week.
Happy birthday.
Kyle, you shouldn't listen to the show. It's for adults.
Fuck but, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because you don't want to hear your uncle cuss. He's a family member. He'll never listen to anything I've ever done.
Oh, no, no. Or be interested in it.
No, he loves me, likes hanging out. We get along great. Mm-hmm. But like every family member, could not care less
yeah.
about what I'm doing.
Yeah. And really, he's heading into the could not care less years.
Yeah, you know what? Every year, gets a year older. I think, like, is this the year that, like, mm-hmm. ugh, he's not going to like hanging out? And it's like, no, he's still
no,
a
no,
kid.
No, no, no,
like, he'll still hanging out.
He'll always like you.
Yeah,
but I just mean there's everything else in his life he won't.
I understand.
Care less about.
It's weird. Actually, about 2 years ago, he seemed older than he is now. He seems to have like, yeah, it was just good. But this was the one thing that got him that just went over gangbusters.
Gangbusters. Okay.
Gangbusters.
You got the game Gangbusters.
Oh, I bet there is a game called Gangbusters.
There was a game called.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
No. We got, you know, he's what do you want for your birthday? Money. Anyway, gave some money for stuff. There's some money.
Yeah.
Got him some stuff. You always got to get him something, you know. Got him a bunch of giant playing cards. Because, like, hey, you're bigger now. You got that. We all have a good laugh. He's a book on, like, funny things, ways of handshakes and fist bumps and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, we can do that. That's,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
good fun.
That's
all
fun.
Right.
Sure.
But then I got him a box. Because here, he's been growing a mustache for 2 years.
Yeah.
So 2 years ago, we got him a mustache comb. Mm-hmm. And then last year, we got him some mustache wax. We're like, we got to get something else mustache
sure,
related.
Sure.
So we got him a box of mustaches.
Oh.
And it's called Mustache Party.
Okay.
And we just got it as an offhand. We got to do something mustachey.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It was the hit of the party. Here's what it is.
Yeah.
It's a box full of mustaches. They're like furry mustaches.
Mm-hmm.
You just take the back off. They're sticky.
Yeah.
You put them on. Well, holy cow. Grandma and Grandpa. First, Grandma looks hilarious in a mustache.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
she just loves... That we're all having a good laugh.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
she's the center of attention. She loves it.
Yeah.
Well, Grandpa puts on the mustache, and he looks like $1 million. Now, he's Clark Gable. Now, he doesn't want to take this thing off.
Yeah.
Everyone's just like, jeez.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
like, well, let's take some pictures. And like, yeah, we're all having a good time, but Grandpa likes the mustache. And then everyone else put on the mustaches,
yeah,
and they all had
sure.
a good time. Yeah.
So what sort of mustache did you put on?
One that was about two-thirds broken because I ate it and just took the bad mustache and let everyone else have a better
okay.
time.
Okay,
I don't need props for my comedy. I'm all right.
You're,
but everyone else put on the mustaches
that.
And they all took a bunch of pictures and it was fantastic. To the point where I'm like, hey, where are those pictures on Facebook?
Mm.
This might be a good picture to put on Facebook, guys. I'm a little bit like every day now. Gotta put those pictures up, those hilarious pictures we took? Nope, not
no,
at all.
No.
All right. Fine.
I guess it was funny at the time.
I guess it was hilarious at the time.
Yeah.
We're all delighted, all talking about how we're going to put these on Facebook. Guess we're not doing that.
You know why? They don't need prop humor either. They're no carrot head. They can do whatever they want.
And my my wife makes clothes for my niece's American Girl doll.
Okay.
And again, every year you think like, she's going to have grown out of this.
Mm.
She's 12. She's going to have grown out of this. Cool. Here it goes. Here it goes. But every year it's still the gasps.
Yeah.
And it's nice.
That is nice.
Yeah. It's nice when the kids are still kids. We're like, okay, I'm going to enjoy this.
Yeah.
I know this is going away. This can't last forever. But for right now, this is good.
But yeah, but It can last forever, but it's always replaced by something equally interesting, and so that's, you know, that's the benefit, that's the plus side of it all.
Yeah.
Yes, you think you'll miss those moments, and maybe you do, but then something else fantastically new comes along, and then you're like, well, I like this new normal.
Yep. And that is the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree. I've been sorting through a lot of stuff, especially at home. We've had to do a big tidy because we've got like a cat coming over
Good. It's good to have incentive to clean your house.
Yeah.
And, otherwise, ugh.
We're doing it. Yeah, we're doing it before we go on this trip as well, because it turns out the cat's coming a little early. It's going to come while we're away at the trip. And
why don't you say where you're going?
Oh, San Diego. Mm-hmm. San Diego Comic-Con. My sister-in-law is going to be there, so she'll receive the cat. So the cat will be confused. Maybe, oh, this is who I'm living with. What? Now these guys. Ugh. but I've been going through a lot of stuff, and I posted on Facebook about this today. It's like looking through my old writing and drawings and journals and mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah.
Man, I was older back then.
Is that right?
So much older.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like Kyle, only it took you longer to get to that.
I guess so. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. That's what I thought when I was mentioning that. He seemed like he was going through that older bit for a while and went, eh. But yeah, it is looking back and just going, oh, so much weight of the world on this older guy here.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like with things you wrote and stuff like that. Yeah. It's just full of a lot of bleakness. And...
Well, even bleakness or whatever, but like taking it all so incredibly seriously and just going, oh, yeah, this guy.
Yeah.
This old man. You know, it's like, all right. And just feeling like how I feel now, and, you know, it's not like things are all hunky-dory and roses and sunshine all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got nights where, like, you know, P and I are on the porch, and I'm like, I mean, I'm an easier crier now than I used to be, and maybe that actually helps. But it's like, it was just, things were heavier in the past, it feels like. Mm-hmm. Like, really much heavier.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah, it's just nice that that's not the case anymore. You know, I'm not a real nostalgic person. I like that the past happened because it justifies that I like that it proves that what I remember happened.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not I wish it was back then again by any stretch of the imagination. It's like, just, it feels like everything was like much, much heavier back then.
Mm. Yeah. Oh yeah. I am definitely not the person I was at that time. And I don't think I could even, like, if I tried to write something, I don't think I could write. I'm not saying I could write better then. I don't think I could write what I wrote at that time. Like, I don't think I could reproduce my personality from that time period. Do you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, whatever I thought was funny in those days would be different now. Yeah, it's interesting. You're right. It is curious. And maybe a marker of that, I like that you posted a picture of a mixtape that you did.
Right.
And that's sort of a good life marker, your mixtapes, because they're like, this is what I listen to at this moment. And so it's like sort of this little time capsule of you know, what your musical tastes were at that time.
Yeah, that specifically was one that was really loaded because I was like in the
very loaded.
Yeah. I was in a toxic relationship at the time, mm-hmm. and you could just like it's like a.
Well, it was a conversational mixtape too, right? Because one side was your side.
Yeah,
and
I'm gonna reach behind you and just get it.
Oh, okay. One side was your side, and one side was your girlfriend's side.
Yeah.
And it seemed like
you can say my girlfriend very loosely.
Yes.
We were not boyfriend and girlfriend ever, but we were in a relationship.
Hmm.
So that's the...
Yeah,
that's,
no, I was reading it. It's a pretty good mix.
Yeah, there was good musical taste. I will give it that. But there's, you know, a lot of loaded things in there, which are basically, you know, songs about, you know, you better not love me or you're going to get fucked over.
Yes.
Or, listen, I got to see other people. Song. Or, you know, listen, I know I just said that I want to see other people, but it really bugs me when you see other people. Mm. And, hey, things are great. And, oh, man, we're fucked up. Like, there's so, like, oh, there's so many songs in this.
Well, that's what I meant. It's like a conversation between the two sides of the cassette. So
yeah.
That's interesting. Whereas if I did one, it would just be, what do I like right now? You know, and when my old cassettes would have been all, you know, what do I like right now? A lot of songs were the same bands because I can't afford very many records. So I'm going to pile on, you know, all these for my 10, my collection of 30 records or whatever I had. I'll put on music that I choose from those. So there can be a lot of overlap. So, you know.
When you put together like things that were they happy songs? Were they
didn't matter.
Expressing like anger?
Yeah, there wasn't an emotional content to them. It's just what I liked. Songs that shot the invisible blue beam of light into my brain. That's what I would put on there.
Right. You wouldn't make a mixtape of just songs for when you're feeling, you know, down or something or mood based.
No, I don't listen to music in that way. So I don't put on a song so I can have a cry.
Mm.
That's That's odd. To me, I can understand that people do that. I think I mentioned, you know, like I'm not a big lyric person. That's where we talked about when we did Completely Beatles, to the frustration of some of our listeners that I would disregard them so much. But to me, the singing voice is just another instrument in the song. And often the lyrics, you know, even a great lyricist, you know, often the lyrics are kind of half-baked in many occasions. They haven't gone through them over and over again and polished them to a fine sheen. They just write down what emotionally makes sense, what scans, what works in the song, and then that's good enough, you know? And so...
The opposite being true, meaning, you know, it's like you actually want to communicate something, and it can go from the purely autobiographical, like Ballad of John and Yoko, to like, you know, the words in like Across the Universe. I think you could just read those, and those are just beautiful on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much stuff, you know, something like even like a Hey Jude, you know, is like that. I think is a song that, you know, the song itself is a great song, musically, but it's also, it's just a good song to hear when you're a teenager and you're full of angst and it's just like, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
I know it's really, really crazy right now.
Huh.
It's all right. You know, I think that's one of the reasons that one hit people so deep.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I just like the song. So,
well, you like the music.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily like, if you don't like the lyrics,
I think I don't like them.
If the lyrics don't connect, it's a tough one.
Why?
For me. Because the lyrics are so much part of a song, you know? It's like, it feels like you're leaving so much of it's like you got a plate full of food and you're leaving the potatoes off to the side.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I mean, you could have a great tune and with horrible lyrics, and you could barely care about that. You know, there's lots of songs that you could name that
either and or, you know, go, yeah, that's true.
But if you have a boring song that has great lyrics, I could care less about that song.
But the Beatles are such good lyricists, you know.
But not just that they're good lyricists, but they're such good songwriters that their songs are interesting, that they know, they have, you know, they instinctively have great technique in their songwriting, so they can make a song really interesting, whether it's Hey Jude, which at the right time in the song modulates, like changes key slightly to up the ante. That's not the lyrics doing that. It's matching the lyrics.
Yeah.
But it's a song that pushes that emotional element in the song. If it was not done properly, those lyrics could fall very flat for you. And so I think, and I don't want to disregard lyrics. I do sing along with songs, so I do know some of the lyrics, but they don't stick in my mind. They don't. Mm-hmm. I don't think about them.
I mean, I look at something like, I like Gordon Lightfoot a lot, and to me, like, his lyrics are always so interesting to me. It's like he's just telling a really interesting, weird story.
Yeah.
You know. Do you? What do you think about poetry?
I like poetry a lot, actually. I'm a big fan.
Okay. Why? And I don't. I don't connect with poetry at all.
Yeah. It's a acquired taste. It's something that you have to like sit down and work at.
Hmm.
Because it's not something that we're used to or comfortable with nowadays. Whereas in the past, poetry was very much a... you're so warm, you're watering yourself.
I know, I just missed my mouth with that bottle.
Poetry was read like in a, you know, to people. Like you would
first
sit
of all,
in
I
room.
Looked very crass because I said I didn't like poetry. And then I just spilled water on myself and now I look like a complete boob.
What a yokel. Who's doing this show? But yeah, so I think, but I don't like all poetry. Like some poetry to me is...
Oh, how could you?
...is terribly boring.
It's like saying
dry.
You like all music.
I like poetry of a certain stamp, I guess, and more modern.
You like modern poetry?
Well, like 20th century
modern. You
like
a Howl.
20th century modern.
What do you like?
I like Howl. I think that's a great poem. I like The Wasteland, and I really like The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, the T.S. Eliot poem. Those are both T.S. Eliot poems. I like this guy. I think his name was John Berryman. I like his poetry a lot. He did really interesting like pieces. They're like sonnets, but they're modern sonnets. So they'll be like modern situations, but done in a sonnet, but not in an old language, like new, like modern language, but using the form of the sonnet, which is interesting. And then I, you know, like the classics, like Robert Browning, like there's that one. See, I can't remember the names of them. Sorry, but there's a great one where it's about.
They're all about grass.
Grass?
Yeah, every one of them is.
I think you're thinking of
all of them.
Blake.
They're all about grass. They're just at the end. They're about love or grass. There's no other things you talk about.
You're thinking of Walt
sometimes
Whitman?
Sometimes wine.
Walt Whitman leaves a grass? Is that
sure,
what
they're all about grass or wine or love.
There's a great one by... Well, yeah, it's about love. That's for sure. They're about emotion,
people
I guess.
Loving grass.
There's this great one by Robert Browning, and it's just like... It just details this person like sneaking across a body of water and like going up to the window of his loved one. And it's a very quick poem with like really action poem. It's really quite good, actually. That's one I like a lot. It's actually been a while since I read poetry, actually. I should get the back on.
It does
that.
Change your head a little bit. It does put your head in a different place, and if that's what you like, that's a good thing. Can I just say
there's a great book by Nabokov called Pale Fire, and it's a book of two halves. The first half of the book, I guess it's an introduction, but the first half of the book is this great poem. It's a fantastic poem. I can't even tell you how great it is. It's just a fantastic, interesting poem. And then the second half of the book is, it's detailed. It's sort of like the autobiography or the documentary of this person who has stolen all the works of this author in order to save them.
Oh, okay.
And it's this long, like, second half of the story. But first you get this fantastic, great poem, and then you get this kind of fun story as the second half of it. It's a good book, Pale Fire. I recommend it.
Oh, nice.
And that poem is very touching, very touching poem. And it has lots of interesting things in it. It's been a while. Once again, I read it when I was in my 20s. So, but I think it details like the suicide of the author's daughter and his own near-death experience. That he has like a near-death experience, which he details in the poem. And it's just a fantastic and really interesting book. I highly recommend it.
Okay.
Unlike the rest of Nabokov, which is all junk.
Oh,
I'm just kidding. That's all.
Yeah, strong opinion. Strong words.
He wrote Lolita. So
yeah. As we know from the "Don't Stand So Close to Me" song.
But
you don't listen to the lyrics, so you wouldn't know.
Yeah, I don't know that.
Yeah, in that famous book by Nabokov. That's the lyrics in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you're like, what's that book? Lolita. Ah, that makes sense. Hey, good reference, Sting. Well done, Sting.
Too smart for his own good.
Just watched Dune the other week. Man, that guy got well oiled in that film. A lot of work.
I think he's probably asked to.
Probably a lot of sit-ups. He stopped doing that. Good for him. Relax, my friend. It'd be interesting to do a remake of Doom, and just like he's got to be in that same outfit. That'd be tough.
They're doing a remake of Dune.
Oh, there always are.
It's going to be directed by that Denis Villeneuve, who did Arrival and the upcoming Blade Runner.
Okay.
2049, is that what it's called?
Sure, yeah. Blade Runner, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, there are more things. I don't like Blade Runner either. I'm the guy who doesn't like Blade Runner.
Me too.
No, there we go. We're the two guys who don't like Blade Runner.
So we started a podcast.
That's our hook.
That's our hook.
For the podcast. Hey, you like Blade Runner? Eh, I'm all right with it. It's yeah, fine. Yeah, it's okay. All right. We're good. That's okay.
It's kind of weird. Kind of weird tonally.
This is me really digging another hole and making myself an ignorant boob.
Okay.
Here's my problem with poetry.
What, you don't like poetry? Okay.
Here's my thing about poetry.
Yeah.
There's some that I like and probably I could recite if need be. But... What I feel like about poetry is like, what are you trying to say? Well, just say it.
No.
Don't hide it.
No.
Don't mix it up. Don't put it all in this thing. Don't just tell it to me directly. You're wrapping it in something and you're shaping it in a way that isn't necessary to me. And just tell me how it is. I don't want to have to hunt it and find the subtext and the extra meaning and what have you. And that's just how I feel about that.
I just got to look for, a little bit of it's a short poem.
Sure.
That I like a lot. And it's, so this is the poem. You ready?
Yep.
The old dog barks backwards without getting up. I can remember when he was a pup. It's called The Span of Life. That's the name of the poem. That's the poem.
Yep.
I love, to me, that's something that you cannot say outside of those lines.
Sure.
That's that evocative of aging and stuff like that. The idea of barking backwards. I just love that. The imagery or the sound imagery of that, because we all know what that sounds like when a dog gets old and their barking changes to something that's a little, I don't know, it's just so good.
Absolutely. The really, really good stuff transcends everything.
Well, that's it. And I think that's what makes music and poetry interesting to us, or to me, isn't the lyrics in the song, but I like the emotion, like I like that. But it's not just emotion in songs for me. I like the facility of the people who are doing it.
You can like multiple things, multiple
elements? No, I don't think so. I think.
Oh, really? Just need one thing?
Just one thing. That's all you can like.
Okay. Rank them. Yeah, rank the things you like in the order. And what's your favorite this?
I will.
What's your favorite that?
I'll put them on.
I hate what's your favorites.
I'll rank them on our website, and I'll put them each on a separate page with a lot of ads that are really slow to load.
I wonder what was the first example ever in the past of ranking art, just like some cave paintings. Like, hey, what's your three favorite drawings of me killing this animal? that one, and that one. Oh, so you don't like the third one? Yeah, I do. You asked me to rank them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the third one's not that good. No, they're all good. You just made me rank them, and now, fuck. Now we can't enjoy our cave paintings. You don't have to rank them.
You don't like ranking things?
No, it's awful.
Why?
The only thing that's good about ranking things is it exposes people to new things, and you can go like there.
I'm interested
but if you
in that.
If you in any way take it seriously, that way lies madness.
I guess, but it's kind of like when we were talking about that Beatles rank thing.
Just exposes you and gets a discussion
into
maybe
like
some
that.
Songs you didn't even think about, like what's rain? I don't know this. Oh, that's all right. Let's listen to that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of fun. Like
that part's fun, but if you go no, and you really want to fight for that number one,
no,
that's the
that's
best.
That's also fine.
No,
that's fine too.
It's not true.
I like the passion.
It's fine to have the passion as long as you.
I
want to
hear
don't
why
treat...
you. But I want to hear why you like that so much, or why you don't.
I don't
like
think
that
I have
so
favorites of things. I don't think I have like a favorite ice cream. I don't think I've got a favorite song or a favorite movie. When people say that, like, what's your favorite movie? I don't know. Here's a bunch of movies I like.
Yeah.
What's
your
favorite one? I don't know. What day is it? You know,
that's
I
fine.
Mean, it's some days I want to watch this. Some days I watch that. And even though something's a favorite movie, I've seen it like 35 times, so I don't need to see it. Oh, you don't want to watch your favorite movie? I don't know. I'll watch a shitty movie over here. You're going to watch Cliffhanger instead of watching your favorite movie. Yeah, I'll watch Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's, I'm going to watch Cliffhanger until I go, ugh. And then I stopped watching Cliffhanger at the end.
Hmm. Did you like
like Cliffhanger when I saw it recently? When the guy got stalactited, I went, I'm done. And then it's
okay.
over.
I saw it a long time ago, so it's I don't remember that scene.
Let me tell you something about old movies from the 80s.
Wow.
Late 80s, early 90s.
Old stuff.
Here's the mix that you see in there.
Blow the cobwebs off.
You get the mix of cartoony violence. Like literally cartoony violence and incredible swearing for no reason.
That's true enough.
Yeah.
What was that about? And the fact that, and this is, I made this comment on your comment about Cliffhanger. I said, you could replace the actors with overstuffed sofas and no one would notice. And I just feel like everyone is, it's all big and swollen looking. Like everything is all like too much of everything. So, ugh.
Yeah, the most interesting part in it for me was going like, hey, there's the guy from Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. Oh, wait, he's in Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh, wait, so Sylvester Stallone. Oh, wait, they know each other in that. Oh, wait, I wonder if that's because of Cliffhanger. They went, let's give them a relationship in Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh, wait, let's see what the opening. Oh, the opening's good. Ah, let's see this movie. Oh, wait, this isn't very good.
Well, the problem, let's talk about Cliffhanger because this is a really important subject to me. The problem with Cliffhanger.
We found our hook.
The problem with Cliffhanger is that it's one of those movies, and I'm sure there's other ones people could think of if they want to tell us about them. I would really like to hear that because they could write to our website, sickydragon.com, or go to the Facebook page, or go on Twitter, or send us an email and let us know what movies you think suffer from the fact that their opening is so powerful and so strong that the rest of the movie can't possibly match that really powerful and suspenseful opening. And Cliffhanger is an example of that, where it has this fantastic sequence at the opening of the movie that's just an amazing emotional scene that just absolutely drains you.
But now let me say, I can tell by you saying this,
you
have seen the movie once.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. I don't need to see it again.
You don't. Because if you see it again,
and
you know what's coming, it's way too much. Like, it's way too over the top.
Well,
like it's,
oh, okay.
It's
the scene
it's way too...
Yeah, yeah.
Too much.
Well, it's a Rennie Harlan film.
Yeah, but look, I know the thing that you're talking about,
over
the event
top.
Is fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But the setup to it is like easily five times too much setup.
Like, how do you mean? Like, to get to that moment, you mean?
Yeah. It's people reacting like beforehand way too much.
Okay.
Saying the same thing over and over and over again, where you're just like, just cut it all down. Seriously, cut this down to like 1/5. It would be so powerful. It would be a great surprise.
Different style.
You'd go, whatever. Oh, it's just, it's too much for anything.
Yeah. This is a different style in those days. But yeah, it's, but that sequence, I mean, once that happens, like the rest of the movie, you're just kind of like, well, they're not going to overcome that. Like, you can't.
Well, it's
no sequence in this movie is going to be as exciting as that or emotional as that opening.
Right. I mean, that's a good start. And then you're like, it's Die Hard on a mountain.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. And so you've got John Lithgow trying to do. Who's the actor from Die Hard who's the villain? Mr. Potter. That guy. That guy. Snape.
Sure. Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman. There you go. Yeah. He's basically trying to do a villain that's as big as that. So he's doing the villain voice, the whole thing. You know, he's doing like, which I turned to my wife and just went, you know what'd be great is to have a hero who just sounds like a villain through the whole thing. But he's just like, we're going to save all the children. Just take my bone marrow. Take as much as you want. You know, it'd be great. Just the villain. The hero sadly has a villain's voice.
Yeah,
maybe he had to like replace his voice in the past, and the only donor was a villain. Anyway,
that's how it works.
But he's so villainous through everything that it's just like there's no twist. There's no nothing. You know, Sylvester Stallone goes to like get a suitcase full of money off a mountain. All right, so go get it. Go, lap dog. You know, like, should we give him, like, his equipment? No! He shouldn't have his equipment. Make him just climb it. Like, why? He's getting your money. Why would you try to make it easy? He could fall off the cliff. Yeah. Now you're screwed and your money's still up there.
Yeah.
None of this makes a lick of sense.
No, it's
You're bullying
it's a
him.
Silly film.
This is stupid. So he's going up and, like, you know, he's got, like, a rope around his leg. And so he's like, I got the money. And I'm like, all right, good. And he's like, all right, when he comes down, kill him. And he's like saying this in front of his friend. Yeah. And the friend goes, hey, they're going to kill you. What? This guy is like, well, don't yell it in front of the friend, you dumbass.
Yeah.
Like, none of this makes
The friend sense. Is Michael Rooker, by the way.
Yeah, Michael Rooker. There you go. Who doesn't like him because of something that happened in that amazing opening scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, which is good.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good thing. But then, yeah, once again, it's...
The movie can't pay it off.
Then if you like Die Hard, that's how it goes through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then the woman from Northern Exposure's in there, not acting much. Didn't really do
not
anything.
Not much for her to do, really.
No, nothing really for them to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Scene where they have to burn money to keep warm.
Yeah.
And, camping is costing a fortune nowadays or something, Stallone says. And then he turns to her and goes, sorry for the bad humor.
Why'd I turn to the camera and say that?
Well, also, it's just like, who says sorry for the bad humor? That's a worse line than the other thing. The other one sounded at least kind of natural.
Yeah. Well, I think Rennie Harlan was like a European, so maybe his English speaking skills weren't that great. So he kind of threw that out there as a thing for them to say. And they're like, I guess we'll just say this
and
weird,
then, and then too
awkward
much
phrase.
Swearing for no reason.
Yeah, yeah.
And then too much violence. That's cartoony, but then has tons of blood.
Yeah.
So it's just like watching a Warner Brothers cartoon where, you know, duck season, rabbit season, blam, fuck my fucking beak, blood.
But I felt that way about the Last Boy Scout as well. Like, I just felt like that movie was like way too much.
Oh boy, that one, yeah.
It makes you tired, that movie.
And also them just like doing gay jokes through the whole damn thing.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, a lot. Once again, I seem to remember.
I saw that during a time when I wouldn't have thought much about
it. I saw it during that same year that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And that I thought about it then means, holy shit, that must have been a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't remember at all, but maybe... I've never liked that sort of humor, so that probably is another thing that put me off of the movie.
Well, Damon Wayans, you know, he's kind of famous for doing the Men on Film thing on In Living Color, where he played a gay guy, reviewing movies, and they reviewed it in a very flamboyantly gay style.
Yeah.
To which some people at the time went, no, it's positive, because, you know, it's representation. It's like, okay, possibly it is, but here's why it's not, is because if you watch Damon Wayans' stand-up, he just does... horrible gay jokes.
Eddie Murphy.
Well, yeah. But at least Eddie Murphy... Okay. I'm not justifying Eddie Murphy stuff, but Eddie Murphy is a much better stand-up comedian than Damon Wayans.
Sure.
Damon Wayans' whole thing is like, hey, you ever punch a gay guy? Well, it's like this. And you punch him, he's like, and it's just like doing the guy like running and kind of screaming, and that's the thing. That was like... That was his ender.
Yeah.
That was his ender. Terrible. You know, and Eddie Murphy, yeah, it's awful. Clearly awful, and he's apologized since. Damon Wayans, I think, has not apologized.
Has Eddie Murphy apologized for that?
Oh, yes, he has.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad. Yeah, I watched one of his stand-up movies, whichever one, Raw or the other one, and I turned it off because...
But here's the other thing you got to think about with that is, that was co-written by Keenan Ivory Wayans.
Ah.
So I think the family had a problem with gay people, meaning it's rough for that many brothers. I'm going to assume one of them is probably, and they having a rough time. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to assume.
Huh.
Yeah. First of all, you don't do that many gay jokes without... There's a reason.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whatever the reason is, the 80s. It was a problem. But we all got through it.
We've all been there.
And you know what? We're all younger now, so it's all fine. We had that old man.
There's that great line from that Bob Dylan song, My Back Pages, right?
Yep.
I was so much older then, I'm younger
than
that
now. Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Line. Once again, good lyrics. Kind of poetic, that line.
Well, I mean, he's the guy who, when you go, hey, who's a poetic lyricist?
Oh, yeah.
I like Bob Dylan. Yeah, I like Bob Dylan. That's your go-to guy.
Sure. Leonard Cohen?
You go Leonard Cohen. You go a little Tom Waits. You go a little, who are we going for women with that?
Joni Mitchell.
Joni Mitchell would be your go-to. Yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
Yep.
Especially your later stuff, like the Hissing of Summer Lawns or Hichira and things. Those
yeah, and then when she went into just singing limericks, that period. I was thinking about doing it.
No, I wish I could imitate her. I was thinking, oh man, I wish I could imitate her. But I know.
I mean, you can't. She's just too good a singer.
She's just so
if it was
good.
A Tom Waits thing, oh, you could just boom right into a Tom.
There was a young man from Nantucket.
Yeah, you could just do
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. You could do a Leonard Cohen, probably. You could probably get into, You could do a Bob Dylan.
Yes, I can a little bit. If
whose dick was so long, he could. There you go. Absolutely. 100%. But Joni Mitchell. We've stumped ourselves.
Yep.
Ah, damn
she
it.
She had such a distinct style.
There's a woman who can do a good Joni Mitchell from the Irrelevant Show that I should just call her up and have her phone into this.
Yes, please do. I'll wait for you. I'll just wait.
I'm sorry.
You're pretending.
That was a fake phone.
You're pretending.
That didn't exist. I am terribly sorry.
Well, I'm going to, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to rank my favorite poems.
Okay.
For this episode. And I'll
Ozymandias, number 5.
That's pretty good. Ozymandias is pretty good. I think that's a good poem. And what's great about those sort of poems is the fact that they say a lot in a very little amount of time.
Yep.
You know, they get a point across and get out. They get in, deliver it, hit the road.
Yep.
And I appreciate that. Like, there's no need to write a whole novel, but then people have, I guess, written a whole novel based on Ozymandias. But that you don't need to say much more than that poem, I think.
People have made too many Watchmen books based on Ozymandias.
Too many?
Yeah.
How about a TV series? Have they made too many of those based on Ozymandias?
Too much of everything. I'm taking Ozymandias off number 5. It's ruined because of that. They're gone. Okay. Give me your 5 best poems. Go!
Oh, no. I'm going to do it later.
All right.
I have to think about it. I have to sit and think.
Number 3, alligator pie.
Alligator pie?
Yeah.
So Shel Dennis Silverstein? Foon.
Oh, is Dennis that who Foon,
oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
Shel Silverstein. I do like a Shel Silverstein.
Yeah, I guess.
So, Giving Tree. That guy.
I've never read the Giving Tree.
You've never read The Giving Tree?
No. I never read Shel Silverstein.
You've never read The Missing Piece?
No. Okay. And I never read them with my daughters. My daughters read the books. Like I have them at home and they read and enjoyed all those books. But they read them themselves. But I didn't read them to them.
Okay.
And I just say I never read them. I don't know.
Okay, here's what I'm going to ask our listeners. What's a Shel Silverstein thing that Dave should read? There, let him know.
I have them all.
I know, but
what should he
read? I say The Giving Tree.
The one about the lion?
I don't know the lion one, but then neither do you because you haven't read it.
I haven't read it. I know the book sitting on my shelf.
Because you don't like lyrics, so you just like opening a book and just feeling the pages, just flicking them, flicking through them.
It's not that I don't like lyrics. It's just they don't stick in my mind and they don't like... Not like
no,
most,
you are.
They're not most. They're not the most meaningful part of most songs.
Really. It is an interesting part of our Completely Beatles podcast when you bring that up. Mm. That I think does make people go, "What?" that's an interesting thing.
This is so important.
So when you got an album when you were a younger man and they had the big albums,
yes,
would you then look at the lyrics?
Of course, I would.
You would care about the lyrics.
I would sit and read the lyrics. And
okay.
I mean, because I would like to sing along with the songs, and that would be your helper.
Okay.
To help sing along, and I'd be curious what people sang, even though I wasn't like Elvis Costello when I first started listening to Elvis Costello.
He's an interesting lyricist.
Yeah, but I couldn't understand what he was saying.
Mm-mm.
When I was young.
No way, shape, or form.
It took a long time for me to figure out what, but I.
And that's why Phil Collins is the greatest singer of all time. Always know what he's singing.
Always very clear.
Nice and clear. Nice theater voice.
Good enunciator. That's right. That's why you replaced Peter Gabriel. Mm-hmm. No one knew what that guy was saying.
No one knows what that guy's singing.
People actually thought he was singing The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. No way was he saying that because it makes no sense.
Nope.
Ridiculous.
Nope. Phil Collins, there's no lyrics. That's what the album was called. No lyrics required.
No lyrics required.
We get it. You're very clear speaking. Well done.
I'm not a huge Phil Collins fan, but he, as you know, he did
The Artful Dodger on Broadway.
No. He inspired
the London.
He inspired the name of my studio.
Oh, explain.
Stu Studio. That's the actual name of it.
Wait, this is our hook. That you never feel bad like turning it out early. The show.
Turning it out early.
Tuning it out early.
Oh, tuning it out early. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was going to say something about, and I can't remember now.
You open up an album, you look at it, you look at the lyrics, you like...
Oh, Elvis Costello.
Elvis Costello.
I went to the library, the Vancouver Library, and they had a book of his first 3 or so albums.
Right.
Like the transcriptions, like guitar tabs, but they had the lyrics. So I would carefully read those to try and figure out what he was singing in his songs. Because, he's English, so his frame of reference is different. He's older than me, so his frame of reference is a little different. And then, a lot of wordplay and stuff like that, and so you're just... Yeah.
You know what we haven't had as a hit song for a while?
Mm.
A song in another language. Where you get like a 99 Luftballons or something like that. You get a Rock Me Amadeus.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Is Rock Me Amadeus in a different language? This Rock Me Amadeus part is in English?
The version I'm thinking about.
Okay.
But I think they did do an English version as well. But the foreign version was, what is it, German?
Yes.
What was it, German?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the German version was like a hit song on the radio. Possibly. And maybe we just all like German songs.
Possibly
a little
Austrian.
Dominica, Nika, Nika. You get a little French there?
There you go, a little French there, the singing nun.
Yeah, we haven't had a song in another language be a hit for a while.
We have not.
What
I'm
up?
Trying to think. Mamma Mia? ABBA?
Yeah. That's just, yep, that's right. La Bamba?
Sure.
Sure. There we go.
La Bamba's another one. Probably more than Mamma Mia.
Yeah, much more. Considerably more.
Okay.
Can you think of one, folks out there? A song that, just yell. Just yell at your device.
A new song.
Yep.
That's recently come about.
Please just text us.
I have one for you. The Macarena. That's in a different language, right?
I think it might be.
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's recent. I mean, that's...
Not at all. No. Nope. Okay. Nope. If a baby was born during that, it would already have learned to drive and have driven away from this.
Okay. So you're thinking a little more recently than the Macarena. So
yeah, like
everyone,
in the last 10 years.
Last 10 years, a song that's in a different language.
That's a hit.
That's a hit song.
You would think
I've got one.
All right.
That guy, Psy. What's his name? The Korean rapper. Gangnam. Oh. Gangnam Style.
Gangnam Style?
Isn't that a different language?
Is it?
What does that mean?
How does the song go? I know the Gangnam Style. I know that part.
Yeah, yeah. But the rest of the song, you don't understand what he's singing. Right?
Is he singing in Korean?
I believe so.
All right, then. Asked and answered.
I don't know.
We've solved this puzzle.
Well, I don't know if we have, but I think we have.
We've solved it completely. Good for us.
Would be an example of a song that's...
Now, last week, we did our normal hypocrisy, which is we always say we're not going to go see a movie, then we go see that movie.
Yeah.
So we went to see... Spider-Man.
Wait, we didn't talk about it since we saw
Web
it.
Of Desire. We saw it last week.
Did we see it last week?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that is a Web of Desire. Is that what it is?
That's what it's called. So
Sticky Hands, Big Heart. Is that what it's called?
That's what it's called. That's right.
Stop Making Spider Sense.
Oh, I like that one.
Just cut the other two out and just have that
one.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm going to edit it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Without being spoilers, what'd you think of the movie?
I hated it.
All right.
You said not to spoil it.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. No, I loved that film.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was very good. In fact, I liked it so much, I went and saw it the next night.
I have been trying to find a time to see it in 2D because the 3D was so damned annoying.
The 2D or 3D was terrible. 3D. And if anyone has not seen the film yet and they're thinking about going to see it, make sure that you see it in real 2D because the 3D wasn't filmed in 3D. So it's a whatever they call it. It's processed.
Yeah,
it's,
the 3D stands for damn it.
Yeah, and so there's scenes.
Ow! It's so dark.
It's
ouch.
That and there's scenes where, because it wasn't meant to be 3D, there's scenes where the 3D really makes glaring problems with the edits because it edits into like a 3D poking out kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't make sense because it shouldn't be poking out at you. Like it's nothing. It's just an edit. So yeah, it's a bit jarring and it kind of ruins the flow of the film.
Great lead.
Really done. Yeah.
Great villain.
Tom Holland is very good.
Yeah.
Villain is believable. The milieu of it, the high schools, seems very true.
They set up really good bits, like good scenes that you're like, that's a great idea. That's
great
a
chaos.
Great idea.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
And something I really like is, you know, for all the superhero movies that have been in Marvel since, you know, Iron Man and, you know, the most recent DC ones, you don't get a guy stopping a bank robbery or, you know, stopping a mugging.
Yeah,
don't.
Or giving directions.
Or giving directions. But just doing basic superhero stuff. Mm-hmm. Like when you think, what's a superhero do? Does this, goes in the city, stops a crime, you know, webs up the villains, swings off or leaves. You know, when's the last time Batman stopped a bank robbery?
Yeah.
No, it's like he's dealing with angst and wanting to kill Superman and bullshit.
Yeah.
And it's like we seem to have forgotten that's the fantasy of like, oh, there's something in my neighborhood that's a problem. If I had powers, I could help that, you know, I could stop that bully. I could do this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they will go with this. And it's like, oh, yeah, this has been a really big missing piece to the whole superhero thing of just like a regular dude that's not fighting cosmic disasters or world ending tragedies.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, he's just grounded, regular, basic superhero doing the job.
It feels like when you watch a Reacher film, that's a good Batman movie.
Mm.
Like, that would be a good Batman movie because it's just him figuring out
doing
something.
Some detective work.
And does some detective work.
And then like Batman punches a guy in the groin.
Punches some people, yeah.
Yeah.
The groin's a good place to punch people.
Yeah.
The books make that very clear. That and the headbutts.
Sure.
They're the two like things, they're go-tos for if you're in a fight. Because you're not, Reacher is not in a gentleman's, he's not, you know, fighting by Queensbury rules. He's fighting... by, you know, street rules. And street rules are, you know, you win the fight. How do you win the fight? With the most, you know, the most, basically you start with nuclear annihilation. That's the first thing you start with when you have a fight, right? So you just start with a headbutt or a punch to the groin. You don't do a few feints and jabs and punch the guy in the shoulder. No, you just get him down and then kick him in the head a few times.
And the standard thing seems to be now, oh,
And that's my advice to everyone out there who's listening to the show as well.
Absolutely.
Punch to the groin, kick to the head a few times.
There you go. Most superhero movies now, it feels like this. It's like, hey, the superhero gets his powers. Okay, who's he got to fight? He's got to fight something that is his fault anyway, or someone he knows, or something that's related to him, or something that wouldn't be a problem if it wasn't for him. Like, the villain is motivated by something the hero does, like a Tony Stark. Oh, the villain needs to kill Tony Stark and is jealous of Tony Stark and needs to get Tony Stark out of the way.
Yeah.
And so that's why Iron Man's fighting that guy at the end. Okay. Or second movie. Oh, your dad and my dad didn't get along. Now we got to fight and do all this shit. It's like, all right, fine. You know, what I like about the Spider-Man thing, without, again, saying anything, it's just, he's fighting someone unrelated to him.
Yeah.
It's just like, this guy, yeah, there's a villain over here. Oh, you got to fight him. Oh, do you have, like, a tragic thing where, like, no, it's a villain. You're a good guy. You got to stop him. That's it.
That's good. And the fact that he just kind of stumbles on it and just through his own sort of...
Yeah. You didn't...
Investigating and checking in and look, you know, and it's not that horrible... what I think is a horrible cliche that... become so common now because it's so easy, which is that the criminal has to get the hero. He's coming after him. I'll teach them or whatever. I'll teach him.
Yeah.
I'll teach those criminal minds people what's for. I'll capture one of them and then they'll figure out where they are and get me.
Yeah, I'll put him in a hot air balloon and try to kill him and there you go. Whatever.
That seems like a good idea.
But this has always been a problem with, like, you know, what they know with Batman. It's like, what, you know, with Batman the TV show or the old comics, like, oh, who's Batman fight? He fights the Joker. Why? Well, the Joker is robbing a bank or he's killing people or he's doing whatever. Yeah. And Batman's got to go fight the Joker. And then over time it's been, you created me. It's like, fuck you created me.
You're a bank robber.
Fuck you. No, you threw me in some acid. Well, if you have Batman actually throwing a guy in acid, then Batman's a murdering shithead.
Yeah.
And now we got a problem with Batman off the top.
Yeah.
Like, when they did the origin story of the Joker, which was a maybe origin story of the Joker, you know, he was a criminal and he accidentally fell in some acid. Batman didn't go toss and then, like, did look to check if he threw a guy in acid.
Yeah.
Batman would look to see if he threw a guy in acid.
Yeah.
You know, and the guy, like, falls in some acid and, you know, because he's doing something and, you know, trips.
Does also not get the comics code on it as well because of all the acid in the
this
story?
Is before. Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's a fine joke, but it happened before then, so it's irrelevant.
Oh, yeah, you hear that? I just got nerded.
You got nerded out.
Nerd block.
And you got, like, a Wonder Woman, right? And it's like, who's the villain? Well, you got to fight something that's part of your deal and you're destined to do this. Okay. Hey, Superman, what's your deal? Well, when you came from outer space, someone chased you and they're connected with you and he's got to get you directly. Fuck off.
Yeah.
You know, who's Superman fight? Lex Luthor. Who's he? A bad guy who wants to make money in real estate and is going to do his evil stuff. That's the deal with Superman.
Yeah.
He's going to stop this guy.
Yeah.
The end. It's not Superman's not the cause of the damn problems. Most of the times in superhero movies, if you took the superhero out of it, everything's fine. Things are great. There's no issues. Things are better if the superhero doesn't exist. And that's a shitty superhero situation.
Yeah.
So boo. So good for Spider-Man not doing that crap. Good for him. But you're right. The school stuff is good.
Yeah,
it feels like a modern school.
Yeah.
It's nice and casually diverse, you know, and it's just like there's a nice representation there. It's just good. Yeah.
It's a very good film.
And funny. Like, legitimately funnier than most of comedies that you'd see now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, real good audience. Whoa! Ha-ha! Mm-hmm. Ooh!
Yeah.
Laughs and good thrills and, good stuff.
Yeah. I was the night we saw it together, I sat beside two really appreciative boys. So I like that. I like the fact that they really enjoyed the movie, reacted throughout the film to everything.
Yeah.
And then when the film was over, sat and discussed the movie with each other. Unlike people around us who were, like, immediately on their phones, slouching in their chairs, you know, paging through whatever. These guys are just like, oh, blah, 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 talking about the movie, talking about this, talking about that. So I really like that. And then when I saw it the next night, the audience was once again a bigger, they reacted way more than the audience we saw it with.
Oh.
Like, way more like, whoa. Just like lots of gasps and laughs and everything. Yeah, it was really good. Yeah, lots of fun.
I thought that I was going to like Spider-Man and I was going to love Baby Driver. And to me, it was the flip.
I can see. I see that.
Baby
Driver, there you go. Baby Driver is a very good technical film. But if you're not a fan of noir, if you're not a fan of crime movies, if you're not a fan of that kind of, like, there's no hope, you know, because we're criminals and criminals always end badly mm-hmm. sort of films, then you're not going to really, you're not going to take much out of a Baby Driver, because those movies are kind of cold. They're very much they're very much not a procedural, like a cop movie, but they're very much a by, you know, A to B, B to C sort of stories, you know, that, you know, whatever you've seen, whatever movie you've seen, all those great black and white films from the 40s and 50s that starred Kirk Douglas,
yep.
you know, this is going to happen.
Isn't it amazing Kirk Douglas is still alive, by the way?
Yeah.
Yeah, good for him. Keep on keeping alive.
Keep on keeping
100-year-old Kirk Douglas, good for you.
But, you know, when you've seen one of those films where, you know, it's like the character makes his choice.
Yep.
His choice is a bad choice.
Yep.
Now he's doomed. The rest of the movie just details the eventual damnation of this character. Those movies are not heartwarmers. And so if you're looking for a heartwarmer, that's not the kind of films that you go
yep.
to. And I think that what Edgar Wright wanted to do when he made Baby Driver was, one, make a film that kind of related to like this idea that he got in his mind of a great car chase. But also he wanted to imitate crime films that he liked a lot, like The Driver, the Walter Hill film. And so he wanted to, and I learned something interesting actually, but okay. Walter Hill actually, is that he did the rewrite on the Alien script. And he was the person who changed Ripley into a woman.
Oh, nice.
He changed the sex of the character, which is interesting. So it wasn't, once again, it wasn't done because, you know, we got Sigourney Weaver. Let's change the sex character. She was an unknown actress.
Like, yeah.
That's her right claim. That was her rise to fame, that movie. But just the fact that...
I think
that,
you're forgetting her silent role in Annie Hall.
Mm, sitting in bed?
No, she wasn't sitting in bed.
Oh, what did she do? Did she stand disapprovingly behind him?
No, she was coming out of the sorrow and the pity. It's a long shot, but it's her.
Oh.
And
maybe getting her mixed up with Shelley Duvall in the sequence where she's laying in bed with Woody Allen.
Oh, yeah. Shelley Duvall has lines.
Mm.
Yeah. Funny lines.
Yes.
I'm not going to ruin. But yeah.
It's good. What a great actress she was.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like I can understand like your takeaway. Like you really like The Big Sick, which I assume I have not seen it, but I assume is, you know, a film, but a heartwarming film of overcoming these medical odds and sort of a happier sort of a it ends sadly.
No, but it's a thing.
It ends sadly.
I don't know it. What?
It ends sadly. It ends tragically.
I'm not going to say how it ends.
It's like Brian's song. You'll just be weeping, bawling your eyes out when
the
movie's
over.
Well,
it's a true story, and it's written by the people in it, so you can tell one element of it is going to be the case that they do make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just don't, like, Baby Driver is not a feel-good movie, and like maybe that's just,
well, here's what Baby...
where you're down on it.
Maybe.
He said, I need some more laughs and happiness in my life right now. I don't need a lot of
sadness. I just wanted to see, when I see an Edgar Wright movie, I mm-hmm. feel like he's going to add more than I expect to the film.
Okay.
It's like he's not just going to do the formula. He's mm-hmm. going to add something to it, comment on it, you know, not destroy it,
yeah.
but, you know, he's going to play with it. He's going to mm-hmm. do some stuff. So when
well,
I,
that movie
so
has when it to play.
Okay, but when I saw it, it starts off with, you know, baby in the car waiting,
mm-hmm.
and he's... You know, I've seen the music video for Mint Royale.
Okay, I've never seen it.
Oh, okay. Well, you
I
have
need to.
You have seen it because it's actually in the movie oh,
okay.
itself for
okay.
a brief period of time. But yeah, in the video for Mint Royale, it's Noel Fielding from mm-hmm. Mighty
yep.
Boosh.
Sure.
And, you know, he's like, how long are you going to be for the bank robbery? It's going to be 3 minutes, whatever. Okay. Wait, how long? Maybe it's going to be 3 minutes. All right, great. And he picks a cassette out and plays it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's dancing in the car and, like, running the... He's basically doing what Baby does
yeah.
in the beginning. So I went, oh, okay. So this is the part that's... Like the music video Edgar Wright's
done. Yeah, yeah.
All right. So he's just enjoying himself, and he's you know, tapping things, and mm-hmm. he's having
yeah.
a good time. So, like,
playing
he's
the guitar
got,
and...
he's got joy
yeah.
in his life. He's
yeah.
got some joy in what he does. He brings joy to a dark situation. Then
yeah.
when you see him later where he's making a sandwich for his foster father,
yeah.
he's joyfully making a sandwich.
Sure.
So it's like, oh, this guy brings joy to the dark.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. And then as things get darker, the joy is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that didn't work for me, was I was like, oh, no, you've just set up that, like, he finds the joy, and then it becomes formula.
But I don't think that's what he's formula. I don't think that's what he's doing.
What is he doing?
What he's doing in those situations,
even walking for coffee, he's finding the joy.
That's
in
right.
the fact where he's, like, distracted.
That's right. But as soon as he comes back, he shuts down.
Right.
And so what he's trying to
he
do
is you've got to, like, blank out.
It's not that he's trying to blank out. It's that he's trying to distance himself from what the reality of his life is.
To the point where, like, someone takes his sunglasses off, he's got another pair. He takes
that's
that
right.
sunglasses
that's
off,
right.
he's got another pair. He's got layers on layers and
that's
layers
right. he's trying
of
to,
coverage.
He thinks that if he just stays out of this thing, that it won't
right.
get on
when
him.
When he's alone.
Yeah.
Or
he's
when
a different
he's
person.
With someone he loves. That's
yeah,
right.
He's a different
he's,
person.
He's got joy in his heart. And then... And
but then when he's around a bunch of people who are murderers
right.
and criminals, he shuts down because he does not want to associate himself with murderers and criminals.
Absolutely understand. And that's and that's a very realistic, reasonable thing.
Yeah.
What I wanted to see was, like, since you've established that he's got this joyful rhythm to him, I would like to see that then later on as something like, they've got dark, he's got joy, and he's got even more joy because he's got love.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, does that empower him and make him more joyful? But it still made him more worried and just made things heavier. And I'm like, oh, just waiting for that. That turn where you see what you makes
want that,
him.
You want that the good ending. You want that joy.
I want to see a consistent ending with the character that we've established.
Yeah.
You know, why is he different than the guy in Driver? The guy in Driver is very somber and just straightforward through the whole thing. Or in Drive, you know, the guy is just very somber and this guy had another element.
Yeah,
and that element gets lost.
Here's the thing, though. At the end of the film, and I don't want to spoil it for people.
Right.
But
it takes place in a blimp. We'll say that much.
He reaches a point where it's a stereotypical chase movie scene,
right?
And you know where it's going to go, you know how it's going to end, and he doesn't end that way. He changes it.
No, there's cleverness.
He makes a good choice in that moment, a good choice. And I think that's,
he finds the third option.
That's right. And I think that's in the situation he was in, which is which he created for himself,
right?
With his careless behavior, he finds himself in the situation. He tries to live in the situation, but not let it corrupt his life.
Right.
But that's impossible. It's going to get into your life. You cannot.
Yep.
You cannot sleep with dogs without rising with fleas. Right.
Sure.
So he, it starts to creep into his life, and he tries to fight against it the best he can.
Sorry, I just smacked my microphone thing in rage. Can't believe what Dave's saying here. Go ahead. I hate how you're putting down dogs.
But I think that he...
They don't all have fleas, my friend.
He makes a choice that he could get out. He has a chance to get out of it, but he doesn't want to leave other people at risk. So he goes on into the situation knowing that he's putting himself into harm's way and stuff like that. Yep. I think you should watch the movie again.
Maybe. Yeah, I think how he solves the problem is realistic and it's interesting and it's good. And the ending is the ending is the ending. We're not going to discuss that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would like to have seen when he, in his maybe romance with her, a little bit more of what we saw at the beginning of him alone in the car, or him with his foster father. That kind of.
I wish they'd had more dialogue. I'll agree with you there. I wish there'd been a little.
Or even more dialogue. Physical business that just shows that he's.
He wanted a sex scene. Now the truth comes out.
And he's got to say, so how long do you want to have sex for? 4.5 minutes? Okay, so that is Rock Me Amadeus.
Rock Me Amadeus?
Rock Me Amadeus.
Okay, that's fine.
But speaking of movies that do exactly that, we were watching Hudson Hawk last night, because why not?
I like that movie.
I do too. But that's a movie that has that same angle of we're going to do a heist. Mm-hmm. How long is it going to take? Here's some music.
This is kind of impossible, since they're both singing the song.
Absolutely.
It's pretty silly. That movie's so silly. I love that movie.
Yeah,
though.
And also,
so
I don't think Danny Aiello is going to be a hang off of something and do pull-ups. This is the unbelievable part, sir. I'm sorry. Danny Aiello. No, sir. Yeah.
A machine that makes gold. That's fine.
I know. I love that when I was watching it with my wife kind of turned me on to it. She went, no, actually, it's all right. Yeah. I'm like, all right, let's watch it. All right, it's okay.
It's, yeah,
and Richard
it's okay.
E. Grant is really good. Yeah, Sandra Bernhardt is really good.
Yeah, they have lots of fun.
They have some fun, and it's all right.
Early Sharon Stone movie.
But if you're going to see Hudson Hawk, and you just see the poster, and it's like, what is it? It's like, he's a bank robber. He's a robber.
Yeah.
And he's that. All right, Bruce Willis, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're starting off, with William Conrad telling you a story about Da Vinci, and we're in old Italy.
Sure.
What the hell is this movie?
Yeah.
And that's very much a film of its time, you could set it way back then.
Yeah. If only he narrated it in the Rocky and Bullwinkle voice.
Yeah, it's close, but it's not close enough.
That's a very fine film. And I think, obviously, Bruce Willis was looking to kind of return to his character from Moonlighting in a little way, to have that kind of jokey...
He's full on Bugs Bunny at some point.
Very pastiche. Yeah.
Just completely cartoon. But then, again, it's that graphic violence of someone gets their throat cut and tons of blood spurts out everywhere. Mm-hmm, and then they go, what the fuck? What the fuck is fucking going? Fuck.
Yeah, yeah. Perfect film for kids.
It would be, actually, if it wasn't for everything in it.
Yeah, very. The actress who is quite popular at that time.
Andie MacDowell?
Yes, is very good as the nun. I like her character.
Yeah, they're letting her talk by that point because originally they didn't remember the film that they didn't let her talk in.
Who didn't let who talk in?
Oh, very good. There's a nice bit of trivia for you. And when she did Greystoke, Lord of the Apes, the Tarzan movie, she's in it. She apparently acted so poorly that they overdubbed her voice, and it was Glenn Close that did her voice in that film. But then, yeah, she did Sex, Lies, and Videotape, and then, you know, became a big shot for a period of time.
For a period of time. Well, I think, okay, I'm going to guess that her voice wasn't, it wasn't that she did a bad job in the role. It's just that she probably was badly cast for that role. She's kind of a down-home Southern gal.
Okay.
And that's her character. And why are you making a down-home Southern gal into a daughter of landed gentry?
Yeah.
That seems a little
there you go.
Bad. Maybe hire a British person for a role that should be played by a British person for a change? Hello?
Yeah.
But instead of hiring British people to play Americans. But this is perfect. Film... Yeah. Hello, everyone. I'm an American.
And I watched this and I went like, what's Richard D. Grant been doing lately? And I just went, oh, yeah, I just saw him in Logan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, they don't let him go full Grant.
They don't let him go full Grant. But he's also been, he was doing a show a little while ago as well, a TV show.
He's in Game of Thrones.
Is he?
Yes.
That's maybe what I'm thinking of. I don't watch. You know how little I watch that show or how little I know about that show? I was paging.
You didn't know there was dragons in it.
I didn't know there was dragons in it. And I was paging through, I got an email from my cable provider. And I was paging through the on-demand stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a movie called Got. I was like, oh, what's this movie? I never heard of this film. I'm looking at it. Got. I went, oh, it's Game of Thrones. Oh, dummy. I was so dumb, I brought it up again on a show and let people know how dumb I am. That's how dumb I am.
We've been, speaking of things that you look at on cable, because we've been watching the new Twin Peaks, we went, you know, let's watch the old Twin Peaks. So we watched the first season. We're like, okay, now let's get into the second season.
Oof.
Everyone just relax. Here we go. We're getting into it. And there is some good stuff.
Yeah, there's some good stuff. You can't.
And now we've gotten into it, and they've stopped running it on cable. They just pulled them all.
Oh.
So we had to go to a DVD rental place.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And have rented DVDs of it. Yeah.
Huh?
Came in and the guy went, what? Like, it was just shocked. People came into a store.
What are you here for?
Yeah, I'm trying to masturbate. but yeah, we got stuff from him. And
I'm trying to launder some money here. What do you guys want?
Yeah, there's some movies we like, so we got some movies. Yeah,
I always wondered why there are so many of certain types of stores in Aldergrove. Like, there's certain types of places.
Yeah.
And there's just like so many of them. And I'm always like, why are there so many of these places? And I realized, they're money laundering. Okay, sure. I get it. That's fine. Gotcha.
Yep. A little show called Breaking Bad is going to help you figure that out.
Yes, that's true.
And you can get the DVDs at Black Dog Video if you really want.
Oh, Black Dog Video.
Yep.
Is that place not, doesn't rent that often? Is you're joking.
What's that? What
it seems like they're a store that people know about. They're still around.
Oh, they're fine. Yeah, there's two locations.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're good. They're
one of those things that kind of prove the, like people are like, oh, the industry is dying, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, no, the industry isn't dying. Yes, the industry isn't what it once was, where it was like a giant cash cow.
Yeah, you can't, like, it doesn't...
And you could mortgage your life.
Yeah, you can't have 100 of these stores in town anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you have two or three...
That are very good.
That are good, yeah, you're fine.
You're fine, yeah, exactly.
Like, it's really weird, actually, if you go into Black Dog Video on Canby Street here in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And like, oh, I'm enjoying this DVD store or rental place. Mm-hmm. That's odd. Let me just walk outside. What's the first thing I see? Across the street, a single screen movie theater.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa!
Wait, what year is this?
What year is this? And then, like, you see next to it, flamenco dancing. There's a flamenco club.
Yeah.
What? I'm just gonna hide in this muffin break and just relax for a little bit. No, there's no muffin break there, but
that's too unbelievable.
I know. I was trying to think, like, what's something else that doesn't exist anymore?
You went too far, sir. Yeah, what doesn't exist anymore? A lot of things don't exist anymore.
That's right.
To be honest.
Yep.
A lot of stuff is all gone.
Yep. John Diefenbaker, he doesn't exist anymore.
I know.
Yeah.
He badmouthed our flag, though. He could get out of here.
Yeah, what did he say about the flag?
Didn't like it. Didn't think they should change it, you know.
Yep, and that's why they killed him. Big flag.
The moneyed flag interests. All those people who wanted people to buy new flags.
Here's what seems to be the new thing in movies now. Cassettes. So you got your Baby Driver. He's got all those cassettes.
Okay.
You got your Guardians of the Galaxy. Enjoys having a cassette.
They are kind of making.
You got your X-Men movies.
Yeah.
Who's the best character in there? Quicksilver enjoys his cassette.
Yeah.
Puts his little music in there, and somehow it runs fast enough for him to hear it while he's going at the speed of light.
He has a special Walkman.
I don't know how his Walkman works. That's his mutant power, is to like control the speed of his Walkman to the point where that works.
He has just a little thing to turn it up.
Yeah.
That doesn't burn the cassette.
You know what I would say? You got to do this with his power. It's like, it's a simple thing you say.
Yeah.
Just like, he controls the speed just in his general area. So that's the other reason his clothes don't burn off when he's doing his stuff. And he's got his Walkman close enough that, you know, it's all working for the correct speed.
Yeah.
His
yeah.
watch doesn't, you know, is really goes ahead really fast when he's doing that.
I still have cassettes at home.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
And I still have like blank cassettes.
I'm sure that I would purchased. Be surprised if you didn't have wax cylinders.
I'll be honest, I do not have any wax cylinders. I've not joined Jack White in his use of the wax cylinder.
How many
cylinder.
45s do you have?
Not a ton of 45s. They're kind of the least convenient way to listen to music, I think.
What's the higher speed? 70 something? What is
78s.
It?
78s. I do not have any 78s.
You have no 78s.
No, I do not have any of those. Because once again, my turntable does not go to 78. My parents' turntable did. We could play my mom's Elvis Presley 78s on their turntable.
Yeah,
at home.
Same with my parents' hi-fi.
But the modern ones that I have, they only have 45 and.
Do you have a Sony Walkman at your house?
I do not. I have had in my life. I've had three different Sony Walkmans and a Discman, and I still have a mini disc player, a portable mini disc player.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that's how a graveyard of. But yeah, all my Walkmans broke down over time.
As they do.
Yes.
They and do. The Discman never really worked if you moved at all.
Yeah, yeah. It was not ideal.
Nope. Wasn't ideal at all. You think, oh, I could run with this. No, you
But you
cannot.
Could get some that had a shock element in them that would allow for... It would...
Almost work.
It would... Basically, what it did was it would memorize the head a little
yes.
bit. But if you ran for too far, forget about it. Then it was done for. Like, if you're running for a bus, that's okay. But if you're going for a run, you could not use it for that.
Yep.
No go. Unless you ran on marshmallows.
So what we're saying to you today with whatever you're listening to this on, if you are out you know, on your phone, you're lucky. These things are amazing.
I guess. Well, what was interesting, what was nice about 40, like cassette tapes, for instance.
What was clicking.
They were terrible in lots of ways. I'm not a fan of cassette. I never bought them. I never bought...
They kept pencils in business because had to use those to rewind your thing when it all got loose.
That's true. I did buy the Police's album Synchronicity on cassette because it had extra songs on it.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Oh, do you remember what the extra songs were?
No, I do not. Sorry. But
Synchronicity 3?
That's right. Exactly. They just kept writing them. Synchronicity 3 and 4.
Maybe you should stand close to me.
That was the alternate.
On second thought.
Yeah. My message in a bottle was answered. the story songs.
Every breath I take.
Isn't that on? Yeah, that's right. It's on the same album. I was just gonna say the thing about the thing that was I like about cassettes and records is that they limit. There's an artificial limit built into the fact that you have to turn them over.
Yeah.
And so it creates a break when you're listening, whether you have to flip the cassette or you have to get up and turn the record over. And so when people would sequence them, they would sequence them with that in mind. And then when CDs came in, people in the 90s had this crazy idea that we'll just throw this idea. We'll just get rid of this idea. Of like having a sequenced album, we'll just put all the good songs at the beginning and just sort of let it sort of slowly taper to the end of it. And
so it's just answering machine messages at the end.
Yeah, and there are albums from that time period that I just cannot stand because they're just so badly sequenced. Like if you took the time and you resequenced them, they'd be really good. One I can think of is Mighty Like a Rose, the Elvis Costello album. It kind of perks up near the end, but there's a long desert in the middle of that album.
You know, they got like Jack FM, right? And it's like playing all the old hits. They should have like Jack Shit where they just play the songs that were the filler out like on the albums.
But okay, well, it depends who the
artist
is. There's
a little Miss Greneco for you from Synchronicity. There you go, which isn't totally a shitty song.
I was going to say like
it's a filler song.
Yeah, yeah. But Please.
Okay, Walking in Your Footsteps
by
the again on Synchronicity, the song about the dinosaurs and nuclear bombs.
Okay, I didn't like that album that much, so
I did enjoy that album.
I did not over-listen to it.
Quite a bit.
Maybe because it was on cassette that just really soured me on the whole. Ugh. This cassette's all muddy sounding. Blah. Like I think like a good band, there's very little filler. Or if you like a group, then you'll put up with the filler,
sure.
You know, that isn't like the hit songs. Or you'll learn to like it anyway.
Yeah, you have to listen to them anyway, and so you know, you've got then pleasant memories of that thing.
Yeah.
You know, my problem with like albums and stuff in the past was, so I was like, oh, I'm going to play this Prince album.
Yeah.
That's great because I like these songs. Oh, and there's that Darlin' Nikki song that's going to ruin Christmas. And then we're going to have it taken off. Yeah. And here we go. Because there's no way of like skipping.
But I like the song Darling Nikki. I can see why you don't because it has a bad.
Well, I can see why I don't because it freaks out the parents and they pull the album off. And
it didn't just freak out the parents. It freaked out Tipper Gore as well. And she started the whole Parent Music Resource Center and started the whole explicit lyrics wordings on.
And that's why.
All came out of Prince.
And that's why there's no explicit lyrics today.
That jerk.
That's why hip hop music
There's
had to like really toe the line.
You say that.
I do say the line. What are you saying? Tell me.
But I remember reading an article or an interview with the frontman the frontman of the Eels.
Okay,
and he was saying that if they wanted his album to be sold in Walmart, it could not have swearing on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a song in there called "It's a Motherfucker," and so he had to re-record it as "It's a Monster Trucker." So that's he didn't have to, but that's what he chose to do.
And then what became incredibly popular after that? Monster trucks.
It's all his fault.
Yeah,
that's right. The Eels.
And then all these mothers showed up at the monster truck rallies.
Yeah,
they all had sex.
Why?
Because that's what it really was about.
Oh, okay.
When they got there, like, is this about monster trucks? It's like, no, it isn't.
No, it isn't.
Oh, I get it. And they were all like, yeah, there we go.
Sorry. I wasn't following your logic. Such as it is.
Speaking of comedy, because we're kind of wrapping up.
Okay.
Throwing a recommendation out for we brought him up on the show before, Cliff Nesteroff's series on Vice.
Yes.
Called Funny How.
Okay.
I just watched the first couple episodes.
Okay.
The first one was about Christian comedy.
Really? Such a thing, hey?
Yeah.
What about Noah's Ark?
That was the thing, was like, is it funny? And got into that. And it was really, he like states his opinion on things off the top, but then doesn't dominate with it.
Okay.
He's still himself, but he's not, he lets people talk and like kind of play things out for themselves to the point where you might actually go, oh, I'd like a bit more conflict in this.
Yeah.
You know, and just like allow someone to press the person a little bit more on these points. But they just let them, usually it's like three different people, and they all state their different opinions, and you see how things go. But it was interesting, too, because
Bill Maher doesn't like Christian comedy.
No, he doesn't. Oh, Bill, bless his heart. But they follow Lachlan Patterson, I think his name was, and a couple other comics. They're doing a Christian comedy tour.
Okay.
And you see, like, how's it selling? It's not selling great. And you don't often see that in a show like this. So just like, oh, we invested his money in this, and, well, that show did okay, but this one really didn't do okay. Oh, that's interesting. It just gives you a realistic vibe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the next show was showing someone who was starting off and showing someone who was famous and wasn't that famous anymore.
Oh.
So they showed a woman who was trying to get paying work at, like, Gotham, the comedy club.
TV show?
No, not the TV show. And then also Michael Winslow from Police Academy, the guy who does all the sound effects.
Oh, yes.
Like, what's he up to now?
Oh, cruise ships.
And so they follow, not cruise ships, and they follow what he's doing. And it's really interesting. And Cliff starts off going, I thought that he would be the sad guy in this. And at the end, he's like, but no, this is really flips it around. And he gets into this the topic of, like, what makes you happy? And what makes you happy is being happy with where you are now.
Yeah.
It's not ambition. It's just, it's enjoying the now. And Michael Winslow is enjoying the now, whereas the other person, though you'd go, they're doing okay.
Yeah.
She's more ambitious.
Not where she wants to be. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, you've sold me because those sound really, really interesting.
Yeah. And I want to see the one on comedy classes as well, because that's kind of a controversial thing in the comedy world, is whether or not you can teach comedy and or should you teach comedy.
Mm, mm.
And I got lots of thoughts on that.
You say so. Yes.
I say it's, anything is good in a class, but, watch your money, because there's always someone who wants to take it.
That's true. My feeling about Christians is that they're horrible people and should be thrown into space.
Lions.
Yeah, and fed to lions is good.
Do you think lions ever miss the taste of Christian? Just like, you know what I miss? Christians.
Why would they?
Those were great.
They don't have memories.
Yeah, but they write in their little books, just like
their day planners.
Rear Ryrie.
That day.
That was rolling.
Ate a Christian. 3 out of 5. my problem with
he's
with,
ranking his favorites.
My problem with that is that it's like they're just creating like this little alternate world where they can be happy and no one can and there's no conflict. There's no need for them to like explain or understand who they are or what they believe. Everyone is all patting each other on the back and everyone's agreeing with each other, which is fucking terrible. Like that is the worst situation you could be in.
For comedy Christians, or for life?
For Christians.
Okay, right.
And Christian comedy is just another example of that. Instead of like being Christians, like being actual Christians.
For people that are listening to the show for the first time, you consider yourself a Christian.
No, I'm a Jesusian now. I've changed my changed my name.
But you are a churchgoer.
Yeah.
You go to church.
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't gone for a while because I've been so down on it.
Okay.
But that's my own thing. But anyway,
laying a little backpipe here.
But the idea that, you know, like, what's more admirable is a Christian going out into real comedy. And instead of having like a captive audience of kids who can't fucking do anything because their parents are nuts or fascist bullies and won't let them go out and have a real life.
Right.
And so they have to go into this special, carefully cultivated world of Christian rock and Christian comedy and Christian boring, bloody, how horrible can this possibly, this is the worst. It's the worst. I can't even imagine a life like that. I mean, if you're in it, I guess that's all you have and you're brainwashed, so you're okay with it.
Okay.
But when the brainwashing wears off, it just must feel like the most terrible thing that you've ever experienced. Like, my whole life was this garbage? Like, listening to this, whoever they are, the Newsboys, and watching some substandard comic who's making it because he's chosen, like, this special little field where there's very little competition, and mm-hmm. he can have his own little fiefdom in it? Yuck. And the fact that you can't, like, a person like that should be out there in the real world, like, answering and representing. And you can represent in a way that's not proselytizing and it's not being evangelical, but in a way that's opens you to, you know, opens up what you believe in to people, whether you're making fun of it a little bit or you're, you know, like that's what they should be doing, not creating this little self-contained prison mm-hmm. where everyone's, you know, spend all their time like in a giant circle that snakes around and around and around and around to where I don't know where it ends. And everyone's just patting each other on the back in that circle. That's just the circle of patting each other on the back.
Okay.
You know, and that's not a good place for comedy in the first place. Like, comedy is not about agreeing with each other.
All right. I can just speak to the comedy aspect and not the other aspects yeah. of life. So where would you consider the real world of comedy to be? Because I would say, like, every community is, like, if you go to Yuck Yucks,
yep.
there's a certain mindset at Yuck Yucks.
Okay.
You know, that it's its own thing.
Okay.
And, you know, I was just reading, actually, an interview with Cliff Nesteroff when he was starting. He was going, like, you know, he didn't want to do stand-up because he thought it would all be guys in baseball hats, mm-hmm. all with the same point of view and comedians complaining about their girlfriends and their wives.
Sure.
And he went down there, and it was all guys complaining about their girlfriends and their wives and guys in baseball hats. He went, it is. But there was one comedian, he didn't say who it is, but he was just like, this guy was transcendent and amazing. And I went, there's that. There's that as well. Okay, mm-hmm. fair enough.
Yeah.
But in comedy clubs or bar comedy,
yeah.
it's pretty stand. Like, there is a tone. There's nowhere where you can go, this is what it is.
Sure.
You know?
And maybe you're right. I mean, maybe someone like that went to an alternative club, he would not find a receptive audience to what he has to say.
Yeah, but even an alternative club has its own style, and mm-hmm. then they all, for a while, we're all sounding like Jeanine Garofalo or Patton Oswalt. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
And everyone's trying to do that. Yeah, everyone's trying to find what the tone is.
Sure.
There's no, this is real.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're like, well, where do you eventually end up? You eventually end up on Netflix or doing, you know, a 5-minute spot on Colbert. Is that real? Is that the real comedy? What is the real thing?
Yeah.
You know, but they have, Lachlan Patterson in this. He performs at Yuck Yucks as well and mainstream.
Okay.
You know, but
I don't know him.
That's okay. Yeah. It just does clean. He does clean comedy. Yeah. Mostly jokes about the size of his hands. That's his angle. But they also talk to Pete Holmes as well as like doing...
See, Pete Holmes is out there. He's a person who's put himself out into secular culture and is in a way representing... I mean, he's kind of folded like a tent in the face of the brutality of comedy, but...
Oh, in what respect?
I think his beliefs have kind of taken a beating, but maybe that's good for him. I mean, he came out of that world I'm talking about, a very closed...
Isolated.
Very isolated. Everyone agrees with each other. You go to Christian high school, then you go to Christian college, then you go into your Christian world, and everyone, you know, and that's your life.
Do you think the Christian world... Oh, we're getting to a big thing now. Do you think the Christian world, that kind of clique, aside from having the backing of history, is different from any other kind of clique and group that people find power in? You know, just like, you know, if you're a fan of, you know, this music or if you're whatever, yeah.
No, it's not. It's a power base.
Yeah.
Is what it is, and it's used by people as a power base. So you look at the Republican Party right now, which is mostly supported through right-wing evangelical movements, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's homeschooling or the people who are anti-abortion groups and stuff like that. All these groups are all super, not even well-funded, they're just super well-organized, very vocal groups that are better than any other groups at getting their point across. Mm. They have a mission, and their mission is to change this, and then that's what they go for. They go for that. Mm. And so they go for, like, homeschooling, and they get homeschooling put in. Mm. And so homeschooling takes their children out of, quote-unquote, normal culture and puts them under their parents' control so they can create these little, you know, carefully cultivated people
yeah.
to carry on the parents' beliefs, which are absolutely 100% in most cases the exact opposite of what historically people would have regarded as Christianity.
Yeah.
I'm just talking history. I'm not talking like liberal Christianity or anything else. It's historical, whether it's Catholicism or Protestantism of some sort. What Christianity has become in the United States is so different from what ever existed before. And the big switch in the 1950s, and it just kind of swept the evangelical Christian world. And it's something that's very strange and very different and very odd. And yeah, and their mission is to basically take back the liberal kind of benchmark things. So whether it's Roe v. Wade or mm-hmm. Brown versus the school board or whatever, those are, you know, those are their targets, and they're targeting those.
Yeah.
They're literally targeting them
yeah.
with laser precision, and they're moving in on those as we speak.
Right.
And everything they're doing, whether it's, you know, Pence or Sessions, all these people are all working towards these because that's who's in their ear as you know, that's who's they feel like they're representing,
mm-hmm.
you know, even if they're not 100% behind these ideas.
And they're
you
know, not.
But yeah. they hear their constituents through all these organizations, and that's what they react to.
They're easy things to yell, and they yeah. get people going, woo, and there you go.
yeah.
But yeah,
we have friends that are part of this world. They live in Canada.
Sure.
But I mean, they are part of this world. They are, yeah. you know, they absolutely believe. Like she said to us one day with a straight face, not even with a hint of irony or joking or anything else. She said, you know, she says, I'm always so worried what's going to happen to the animals when I'm taken up. Like, what? This is a worry?
Like her pets or yeah. animals on
the animals on the farm.
Oh, I see.
That she, you know, what's going to happen to them when they're taken up to heaven by God? Mm-hmm. Who's going to look after them? Probably us, because we're still going to be here, but most likely. Because I think what you're saying is absolute foolishness. So you're a weirdo. You know, but these people have carefully cultivated their lives, and that, you know, and they like, you could see them. You could see their lives narrow too. Like when we met them, they went to this big church. Then they disagreed with what they're saying there. We're going to go to this smaller church.
Yeah.
Oh, these guys don't know anything about the Bible. We're going to go to this small little home church.
Yeah.
You know what? We don't go to church anymore. We just read the Bible at home. We're the ones who really understand what it has to say.
You know, half of this Bible doesn't make a lot of sense. We're yeah. just going to read this one
Listen,
chapter.
Listen, I went online and I read this blog, and this guy really knows what's up. What you mean is this guy's telling you what you want to hear. So sort of being challenged to this big church where it's a community of people.
Yeah, you wonder like what they want. Like what's your
power?
Yeah, but how do you get power from just being at home alone? What power are you getting?
Well, the reason they're home alone, though, is because the world is so corrupting.
Right.
That we need to, like, back up, amass our forces.
Right.
And then we're going to attack the world. In the name of Christ, by the way.
Right.
In the name of Jesus, we're going to go out there, and we're just going to change all these things.
Yeah, not the first people who have done horrible things in the name
yeah, of
someone who says they're love. Yeah, yeah, that's
and
pretty
so,
standard.
Yeah, it's just so weird. Like, so their daughter, you know, she grew up, you know, she wasn't homeschooled. She didn't go to school.
Yeah.
But she was an oddball because her upbringing was so weird, you know? Like, I remember my daughter telling me, like, we know them through writing. And so my daughter went over one time. And they were sitting, and they had their feet in their pool. Like they just, and at this time, their pool was not yet a pool. It was once a pool, and then it had become basically a backyard pond because they just didn't have the money to
sure.
do all the upkeep on it at that time. And so the kids were just sitting there. They had their, you know, it's kind of splashing in this little pondy kind of thing. And the dad went by, and he's like, "Shit, let's have a long pond." He goes, "Don't let Leviathan bite you." The girl's like, "Oh, daddy." And then my daughter's like, Who's Leviathan? She goes, "Oh, it's just something from the Bible." And it's just like so weird, right? Like if you said that at high school,
yeah.
people are just going to be like, "You're weird. Like that's weird. Why are you being weird? Like that's kind of weird. Don't be a weirdo." You know, and like they're raised, they never like, they didn't watch television. They had DVDs of Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
That was acceptable to watch, but nothing else apparently. Mm-hmm. Not even Highway to Heaven I made it to that list.
That makes sense. If you've seen it, I understand where they're going with that.
So, yeah, and so then she went off to a Christian college down in the
States.
They
were very forgiving of sex before marriage in the one episode that I saw.
Mm.
They were like, "Eh, it happens."
Okay.
Yeah, it, you know.
Oh, well, that should be very bad because, yeah, here's the great thing. When she went down to their Christian college, or Christian school, whatever, had a boyfriend there. Immediately, wedding plans start. Immediately. Wedding plans start. It's not just boyfriend, girlfriend. They are fiancé and fiancé. I don't know how you say it.
Yeah.
Fiancés?
Fiancés, yeah.
One with a single E, one with two E's.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. Fiancé and fiancé. That's how you say it. Yeah, so it's just like...
It's taken to an extreme.
Like, where is this good? Like, you don't even know if he's good at sex. What do you want to marry that guy for? Yuck.
I mean, that is something you could work on together and figure out. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Unless...
Or not. He could just be one of those people who's just like, ugh.
Yeah.
Not into it. Ugh.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that go wrong there.
What a disappointing life! Like this is, and your parents have railroaded you into it. Yeah, I just don't like it.
Yeah, in this one,
why right now I'm a GCSEian.
I'll give you a little bit of a spoiler on the Christian episode. There's one woman who they talk to who's sells a lot of albums.
Okay, because
she basically does a stand-up act, and then at the end also brings in stuff from her life and how Jesus, you know, helped her through some bad times and like I was dealing with depression and this, and you know, kind of a positive story.
Yeah, those are all great things.
By the way, here's the nice thing too is like she set up, you know, she's got like not a farm, but she's got, you know, a place where people can come and if they need help and
an ark. Yeah, she's an ark.
It's basically like an ark. You know, but she seems to be doing all the positive things, and she's not taking it too seriously. Yeah. That's not true. But so she seems to be a fuller person, which was weird because the next show, there's another person who looked almost exactly like her with a similar accent who was doing a filthy, filthy act. And she was trying to get on Colbert, and they were like, well, we got to find some way of getting you on without taking away what you are, but we can't say, you know, the whole thing about how much you hate sucking dick. Okay. We can't have that. But it's like, both of them were there just doing their jokes and very similar look, very similar body type. And and I'll tell you about Jesus and I hate sucking cock. And it was just like very different. Yeah, both also seemed very, very nice as well.
Listener, does this show sound interesting to you? That sounds like a really good show to me.
Called Funny How.
Check it out.
Yeah, I think it'll have like a really good second season too, because it's kind of finding some of its legs.
It's got to find its legs, yeah.
But there's a kindness to it, and also a very realistic look at stand-up. Mm. And like, what if you don't make it? What happens then? Mm. You know, because there's too much TV about like, you either make it or you fail, and there's no in-between. And, you know, this isn't American Idol bullshit. This is, you know, no, then you got to keep going, and you got to do this, and here's how it goes. And
if it's also,
by the way, here's where you can find happiness in life while you're doing this, because everything isn't just your career.
Yeah. What is it?
What is it?
Yeah.
It's enjoying the moment, because you're alive right now, and you better enjoy what you're doing.
You said it,
man. Because if you don't, we got some problems.
Yep. It beats the alternative. That's what I say.
That we know. Who knows? It could be, it could be a lot of people in heaven worrying about their cows.
Oh man, I hope someone looks after
the cows. Okay,
Mike, what are the sheep gonna do? Could be it's lambing season. It's very dangerous for sheep.
Can I go down as a ghost?
Yeah. Can
no,
I?
No, you can't.
Give some advice.
Oh, I hate heaven so much. I just want to go see my sheep.
I'm gonna go talk to the Holy Spirit. Listen, I want you to go down and inspire someone to go to my farm and check out how the sheep are doing.
Well, one of those sinners that's gonna be damned forever. Yeah. Don't they have their own troubles?
Isn't the blood pouring out of the faucets and things like that? Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing. Us who are heathens, let's just make a pact right
make
now.
Make a pact?
If the rapture happens, we all agree,
guys,
we're going to take care of the animals.
No.
Don't worry about it. We'll take care of the animals.
You're a dumb person.
Why?
Because this is a money-making opportunity right here. You sign contracts with people.
Oh, you're making like when insurance?
Rapture insurance. When they're taken up, you will step in and make sure everything that in their life will be wrapped up, you know, in a honest and efficient way. So if they have dogs and cats, make sure they're sent out, adopted.
Okay.
They're not going to go to a kill shelter. No way. Adopted.
Yep.
Their animals on the farm, looked after, you know, put together some sort of plan to allow for a continuation of whatever property they have into the near future to allow for the farm to wind down.
But here's the thing about the birds.
Yep.
No, because consider them. They're fine.
They're fine. Yeah,
consider the birds. We've heard about that. We heard about considering the birds.
Consider the birds.
They're fine. The birds are going to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
Those fish are probably going to be okay, too.
Don't worry about it. Fish are fine. Domesticated animals, that's a little different.
Yeah. Also,
they're not quite as...
look.
Yeah.
Clear the browser history.
Oh, you'll also do that. That's right. You will go in. You will also go in. I don't know how, you know, I don't know Christians. They could be, you know, they could have some stuff on there that's bad. They seem really concerned about their animals. A little too concerned about their animals, so you don't know what's on the computer.
Clear the browser.
So you got to clear the browser history and go in and delete things. So make sure, have a file, give it a name that's not obvious, but let me know what it is.
Right.
I'll go in. I will dump that folder. I won't even look at it. That folder will be gone.
Oh, you do not want to look at it.
I do not want to look at
it. No, the last thing you want to do is look at it.
Yeah, I don't want to see it. Those people are that repressed. You don't want to look at their secrets.
What's this? It's Lamb of God. Nope, we're not going to look at that. Nope. And by the way, you're also allowed to help yourself to anything in the fridge. It's babysitter rules.
That's right. For sure.
You get at least two snacks.
More than that.
All right.
You can empty the fridge out.
Sure. you should wrap up the show because we've got another show to do later on today.
Okay, everyone. Here's what you do.
We're doubling down because I'm going to San Diego. Yeah, by the time you listen to this, I will not be in San Diego, but next time I'll be in San Diego. If you're going to San Diego, hey, by the way, say hi. San Diego Comic-Con.
If you're in San Diego, wear flowers in your hair.
No, that's San Francisco. You're completely wrong.
Shit.
But come say hi to me. I'm going to be doing a panel at Thursday at like 1 o'clock.
Okay.
And it's the Simpsons SpongeBob Smile Time Hour.
Okay.
So if you're there, come say hey.
So Smile Time. So it's going to have puppets that are going to suck the souls out of children.
Are you thinking of an episode of Angel?
Yeah.
It's sacrilegious. We don't believe in that sort of stuff. We're a nice Christian.
We're a nice Christian podcast, everyone.
That's
our hook. Everyone. We're narrow casting. Do you like us? Why not tell us that you... don't tell us you like us. That's a dumb thing to say.
You know who our hook is.
What I want to say.
Mary Hook. That's our hook.
There you go. Hi, Mary. Here's the thing. Do you enjoy the show? Then write to us and let us know things you enjoy about our show or things you want to talk about, like what I was just saying, or comedy, or those things about... What was it about the movie that... A movie that is... It's the beginning of... Have we asked that question before? Maybe we have. I don't know. Anyway,
where the opening was so great, yeah, that it ruined
the rest,
the
of, the
rest of the movie, yeah, for you. You, yeah, couldn't live up to that.
Yeah, it just like set the bar so high that it was just a constant dropping the bar. You can write to us at our website, sneakydragon.com. There's a message board there. We have an email address. It's sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. We have a Facebook page called Sneaky Dragon. We have a Tumblr site called Sneaky Dragon. We have a Twitter account called sneaky_dragon. You're welcome to write to us there. It's as if our show is called Sneaky Dragon, and it is. And we're glad you listened to it, and we will see you again next time.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Talk to you soon.
What did you say? Do it like a bag of suet? Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sweet and meaty. I didn't read what was on that one.
Mm. Let's talk about it on the show.
Okay.
Do I start? Is this my show?
Yeah. 293.
Holy cow.